Vida Blue has joined us on Sports Byline. I alluded to this before the break, and that was 1972, a very interesting year for you as well with Charlie Finley. First of all, I'm going to ask you about Charlie Finley, your impressions of him the first time you met him, fact and fiction about him.
Oh, he was what he was. He was a self-made person. And, you know, if it wasn't his idea, it was a bad idea. You know, if he didn't think of it, forget about it. And on the other hand, I've got to say he's the guy that should be responsible to get credit for what baseball is today with the uniforms. We had those gold uniforms, the white shoes, everything was color-coded. And look at teams that they have matching shoelaces and caps and sweatbands and mouthpieces and everything else. But he's the guy that started that back in the day when we would travel, the A's would. We would have green tops, gold tops. And, you know, now teams just travel. You go on the road, you have a gray top, and that's what they had then. Now teams have multiple uniforms. But he's the guy to have to give credit for that, and baseball should thank him dearly for that. And, of course, he wanted first base to be green and second base to be blue and third base to be red for TV. He had the insight to see that where this thing was going. And they say he's the guy that talked about night World Series at one time.
Yeah.
So, you know, that grew by leaps and bounds with your TV audience that got home from the 5 o'clock work shift. But he's the guy that started all that stuff, Charlie Finley.
He was a showman.
Yes, he was. The petting zoo he had and at the ball girl.
Was the mule part of it?
The petting zoo in Kansas City, I think the mule was a part of that too, but he flew. I don't know how the mule got here from Kansas City, but the mule was a big part of the day-to-day activities. During batting practice, parents would sit there, look, young children on the mule to take photographs of it, and the mules lived at Skyland Ranch and came down in a nice air-conditioned convertible. A Volkswagen, a station wagon that was pulling this trailer, had a big OA on the side, had the mule. The mule was a bigger star as Reggie Jackson was.
Now, you guys had a standoff over your contract. How much did you want?
I wanted $100,000.
And how much was he offering?
How much did I get? I got 64 something. But, Ron, interesting story about that is Mr. Finley knew all the laws and bylaws of baseball. So after we signed the contract, which went on for seemed like ages, we fly to Chicago, and my attorney, I was the first player to have an attorney, have someone to represent him with contract negotiations, and he was offended by that. And I'm like, come on, man, I'm from Mansfield, Louisiana, 21 years old. Who am I to sit down and negotiate with you with a contract? So we go to Chicago at the Drake Hotel. There was Bob Gerst, my attorney, Commissioner Kuhn, Finley, and his people. So we signed the contract. All is good. I think that was a 13-day strike in 72 with baseball. So I go to Boston, I'm throwing in the bullpen, getting ready. So he puts me on the disqualified list, meaning that he didn't have to pay me until the manager, Dick Williams, deemed that I was ready to play baseball. So the $64,000 that I signed, I think he might have taken 10 of it back, maybe 15, because I wasn't ready to play baseball. So he got me on both ways, but we got the job done. And, you know, you're paid for what you did last year. And Mr. Finley, I'd walk in and say, listen, I know you pitched 300-some innings. I know you had 300-some strikeouts. I know you had a 1.2 ERA. I know you had 8 shutouts. I know you had 24 complete games. But I'm not going to pay you, and I don't have to. You're going to take this or leave it. Because the reserve clause was still in effect at the time, and he had me over a barrel. So what was I to do?
How did he put the championship teams together?
Man, that is the guy was sharp. You know, I would get a phone call at my mom's house, and you always got to identify, Vida, this Mr. Finley. Man, I know your voice. Come on, chill. Listen, what do you think of Don Bellum? Man, he's a tough out for me. You think so? Yeah, I like him. Well, guess what? He's your teammate now. I just traded him, Reggie Jackson, to Baltimore. I got Mike Torres and Don Bellum. Don't say nothing. We got a press release on Thursday. I'm like, well, who the hell am I going to tell? I'm in Mansfield, Louisiana. Who wants to know in Mansfield? But some way, somehow, he would get these journeyman players just filling holes here and there. And, you know, I don't know what our team batting averages were over the 5-year span in which we won those divisions, but it couldn't have been no more than 250. But, you know, we had one guy, Reggie, that everybody feared in the lineup. But my guy, the most underrated guy, was Joe Rudy. He came to work every day. He was like the blue-collar guy that came to do his job the best of his ability every day. Joe Rudy would get a game-winning hit. Next day, the headlines would say, Reggie says, But some kind of way, Mr. Finley knew talent when he saw it, and he put us together and kept us together. But he kept us so hungry. We were always trying to prove to him that we were worthy of the money that he had paid us. And we were the most underpaid team in the league anyway. So, but we just played ball together as a team. To win five divisional titles, I'm very proud to be a part of something like that.
And three World Series, too,
back
in the 70s.
Back-to-back, babe. It doesn't get no better than that, Ron.
And that pitching staff, what was it, Blue Moon Odom?
Catfish Hunter.
Ken Holtzman.
Yes.
Now, the question I have, knowing that you're a power pitcher, how many breaking balls did you and Ken Holtzman throw in your entire career?
Combined. Maybe 200. But we're talking, if we combine both careers, we're talking dang near 40 years of baseball.
That pitching staff was amazing. What was it that brought them so close together?
Well, because we fed off one another. Mm-hmm. Catfish pitched a two-hit shutout. I want to go out there and pitch a one-hitter, you know? And we had Darryl Knowles. We had a short left, had Raleigh Fingers. We had a guy named Paul Lindblad, our long left-handed reliever. And we had Glenn Abbott, a kid out of Arkansas, who was our long right-handed reliever. So we had the balanced attack. And Dick Williams, whoever the manager was, could match up with any lineup, you know, with that lefty-righty stuff. And that's what made it work. But we fed off one another. And our leader was Catfish Hunter. He was the greatest guy I'd ever been around. And the first day I met him, he was just a country guy from Hertford, North Carolina. And the last time I saw him, he was a Southern gentleman.
Which did the A's do, fight harder on the field or in the locker room?
The locker room. I can't lie about that. We fought hard in the locker room. But that's what kept us together. And you know how a family can fight amongst themselves? Mm-hmm. I can hit my brother, but you can't hit my brother. And that's the way that was. And we defended one another on the field. We had an incident against Kansas City, which was our big rivalry, as well as the White Sox and Angels. But at this time, Kansas City was our biggest rivalry. And, you know, we would fight during the division. And so we had an afternoon game. And I saw this guy a couple of days ago at an A's golf outing named Billy North. So he's pitching, he's facing Doug Bird, and he hits a comebacker to the mound, and Dick Williams said, I don't care if the ball hits back to the pitch, run all the way out to run to the base because he may have a heart attack, you know. So Billy runs to first base. He turns around and makes a beeline trail, just cold cock Doug Bird, and of course we got the 4th-and-1 pilot right there on the pitcher's mound. So they untangle us, the A's and Kansas City Royals players. We go back to the dugout because we were batting. So Bando says, what the hell was that about? What are we fighting for? So North says, he hit me in the head in double-A ball. I told him I was going to get him, and today was the day. I'm like, what? So luckily no one got hurt in that little fisticuff. But again, Ron, baseball players don't fight. Most of us don't. We just push and shove a little bit.
The end of the A's dynasty came in 1976 when free agency came into play.
Yes, everybody said, see you later, man.
Yeah, I mean, they had had enough about Charlie. They felt they wanted to make more money and everything. And
absolutely.
And one of those that left as well was you. You were traded to the San Francisco Giants for 7 players. And just to be honest with everybody, I was doing television in San Francisco, and I get a call. I'm down at spring training. I get a call from the newsroom, and they say, find Vida Blue and do an interview with him. He's been traded for 7 players. And I said, I don't know where he is. Well, they were hiding you out in this little motel in the middle of the desert someplace. And I, you know, did my best sleuth work and found you there. And I knock on your door. I'll never forget. You were on the second level.
Right.
I knock on the door, and I say, hey, you said to me, how did you find me?
No, yeah, first of all, how did you find me?
So we went down to the swimming pool, and we sat in the swimming pool, and we did that interview. But 7 players for Vida Blue. What were your thoughts about that?
I thought it was crazy, man. I didn't realize I had that much clout, you know. But, you know, going to the National League was something new for me, too. But the 7 players and a 6-pack to be named later. But I was flattered by that. But now that meant that my new team, the San Francisco Giants, I had to live up to the expectations that were bestowed upon me to be becoming a Giant. And at that time, they still had John Montefusco. They had Bob Knepper. They had Ed Halicki. They had Jim Barr, they had Randy Moffitt, Gary Lavelle. So they had a great ball team also. Larry Herndon, Terry Whitfield, Jack the Ripper Clark. And they had Mark Hill, Mike Sadak. I think Bill Madlock had just come over there. They still had Johnny LaMassa at shortstop. They had traded for Rennie Stennett at second base. And I'm not sure it was at first base. But, no, Stretch McCovey was still there at first base. So they had a great ball team at that time, too. And I was just one of the missing pieces that fit in. And the 1978 season, we had a great season, but we just didn't finish the deal.
one of the things that I respect about this book, Vita Blue, A Life, is that when somebody writes a book, sometimes they'll gloss over the difficult parts in their lives. But you certainly have not.
Yeah.
You've been very transparent and very honest because you battled drug addiction over the course of your career. How did that start?
I say drug abuse. Ron, listen, when you're Vita Blue, just like today, you can walk in the bar and they find out you're there. You don't have to buy drinks. You don't have to buy drugs. Come on, that's how easy that was. It still might be that way. Not for me. But you know, when you're Cy Young and MVP, sometime it'll give you this false security that you're bigger than the game. No player, no person is bigger than the game of baseball. Never ever will be, never has been, and never ever will be. So a lot of this was just a misconception in my own sick thinking that I could, not that I could do this stuff and get away with it, but that I could do it, that I could handle it. You know, I'm different. Oh, it won't affect me like that. I won't get I won't become addicted to the use and abuse of drugs or alcohol. So I'm like, okay, the next thing you know, you're in the middle of some stuff that you can't get yourself out of. But again, it's part of my life that you regret, but it's something that I went through, and there's no other way around it.
I'm going to ask you this. I've always had an observation that, especially with ball players, because they live on a day-to-day existence.
Sure.
What have you done for me lately?
Absolutely.
The fragility of being a professional athlete where you don't know when it's going to end, and if it does end, it's usually early in your productive life.
Right.
How much does that add into just being possibly getting involved with something like this?
I don't know, Ron. I'm not sure if that even factors into the equation anyway. I put myself I was in the wrong place, you know, where I could have been anywhere else but where I was. And you get sucked into this stuff. And like I say, you get that false security about yourself. And listen, Ron, I do know right from wrong, okay? That I do know. And what I was doing then was wrong. It was wrong yesterday. It's wrong today. And it'll be wrong tomorrow, okay? So that's what happens my mother said when you sleep with dogs, you might get fleas. So let's put it to that.
How did you get out of that cycle? What allowed you to break it?
Well, you luckily had some people that cared about me, and they pulled interventions, and that happened to that. I had to go through that two or three different times to get it right. And, you finally go and say, come on, man, you can do this. And you put it up on yourself too, even though you got that support out there, but it's up to you. It's up to you to do it, to say the no and to walk away and not even go there. And, those folks or people that surround you with that type of behavior, they're not your friend, okay? That, to anybody that's in here, shout in my voice, you know, use better judgment and surround yourself with positive people.
Do you have a particular moment in your career that is kind of emblazoned in your mind that you'll never forget? And that Vita Blue, when he sits back in his own private moment, kind of smiles about?
I think about in 71 when I got a chance to be the starting pitcher in the All-Star game. I thought that was cool. I thought that's something that, I could hang my hat on that one and be satisfied with my career, that I was the starting pitcher in the All-Star game. And just so happened, it was the first time two Afro-American pitchers were the starters in the All-Star game, and that other guy was Doc Ellis, and that's pretty cool.
We got about a minute left. Was writing this book cathartic for you?
No, Ron, it was just something that we did. Like I said, we went to lunch and several different times, and my buddy Marty Friedman started putting stuff on tape. And I said, well, okay, what are you going to do with this stuff now? Well, I have a buddy back east that might want to, and he said, hey, we got to go. I said, yeah, okay, go for it, man. Help yourself, you know. I'll do another. Once my career is totally over, I want to be able to sit down and talk about, you know, some front office stuff and issues about why there are no Afro-American people, no anymore. There were not very many Afro-American players in baseball today. And I have my theory about that. And, I want to say that and put that in print.
I want to thank you very much. We've been friends for a very long time. I loved watching your career and also where you are right now. You look
always,
happy
sir,
and good.
Thank you very much, Ron. It's nice to see you, sir. And I do apologize for it. What's it been, 15 years?
Yep.
Let's don't let it be this long again, okay?
You got it. Thanks a lot, Vita. Vita Blue with us in the studio. And again, the name of this book, I hope you'll check it out, Vita Blue, A Life. 17 seasons in the majors. Started off with the Oakland A's, won 3 championships with them, 6 years with the San Francisco Giants, a couple of years with Kansas City. And he was the 1971 MVP and American League Cy Young Award winner, first African-American to win the Cy Young Award with his 24-8 record. I'm Ron Barr. We continue with more of you on America's Sports Talk Show.